You ever been counted out? Ever had to fight for a future they said you'll never have? Then you're in the right place. This is Break Free, where resilience meets redemption. Where real stories tear down fake ceilings and freedom takes root. Your pain has a purpose. Your scars have a sound. And your breakthrough is louder than your breakdown. You can't expect change when you're stuck. Stuck in the same patterns, same mindset, same habits, same circles. It's time to break free. Hey guys, favorites. How y'all doing today? Welcome back to Break Free Podcast. I am your host, Free, and I'm so happy to see you. Today, I have a very special young lady that has an extraordinary story. Y'all help me to welcome Brittany Trill Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Britt.
Hello.
Britt doesn't really do interviews, so she's a little, you know, reserved, but she has an incredible story and been through a lot, but has came out on the other side like she never, ever went through it. So, Britt, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Brittany. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, born and raised, and I live in Atlanta now.
And you're like a big deal on TikTok, and don't downplay it.
So, yes, I have a TikTok, and I do podcasting, and I am a human sex trafficking survivor. I advocate for sex workers, and I'm a motivational speaker, and I have a book coming out, and I'm currently working on a documentary.
Okay, what's going to be the name of your book?
You see, that's where we have, it's finished, but I just can't think of the name yet.
Oh, we're going to pray that God sends you the right name that
yes,
you need.
Exactly.
The perfect name, the perfect title. So tell
Absolutely.
Us. Yeah. And it's gonna work out because you have an incredible story. And especially in this time that we are in right now, there's a lot of young girls, young men that are getting caught up in sex trafficking. So you were trafficked for 3 years.
Yes. Right? At the age of 15.
At the age of 15. And tell us, walk us through exactly what happened. How it started.
Mm-hmm. I was back and forth living with my mom and my grandparents, but, one summer I was living with my mom when I was 8, her best friend's son molested me and I didn't know how to, go about it. So I never told nobody because we were raised in a Baptist church, you know, go to church all the time. So I thought I was getting punished. And if I told, I thought my family was going to, you know, die. So for a long time, I kept that with me and I didn't, I lost myself and I hated my family. So,
So not to cut you off, but you call it somebody's house. What did that the young man stayed at that molested you? Was it like you said something that I couldn't make out? Is it something that started with a G? I don't think you said grandma's. So the house that you went over, what was he to you?
That's which one?
The first time when your mom, you used to love to go over there at first.
Yes, that's my mom's best friend's son.
And what did you call, but what do you call the house? Do you call it like grand aunt? What did you said something that when I watched it, I was like, I got to ask her.
I don't think I called that house anything.
Yeah. You didn't say like my mom's best friend house. You said something like,
No, you're talking about when I was engaging with, the man who kidnapped me, White House.
It's another one. Okay, let's just skip it. It's another one.
We'll come back
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. So initially you liked going over your mom's friend house, right?
Yeah, at first I did until he started making me give him oral sex.
Yeah, and you were how old?
8.
And you also said like being that you was in church, it made you feel like dirty, right?
It made me feel disgusting, like I was going to go, you know, burn in hell. And I thought I was going to disappoint my mom and my grandparents and stuff. And I just never said nothing.
Because you was worried. You didn't know, like, you knew it was wrong or you didn't know it was wrong.
He said he was going to kill me. So when you're 8 and a person is 13, 14 years old, you believe in them. You're like, oh, okay, well, won't say nothing then.
Yeah. So he basically like groomed you, because then after the first time, it was every time you went over there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there was never a time that they, did you begin to like be disgusted when you knew you were going over there?
I was always, after that, I was always disgusted. It was no fun, because I just knew my fate.
Do you think like today, right, for a young 8-year-old girl, do you feel like there's signs that a parent can see to know that something's going on? Well, why a child, like, is it a mood or anything?
It's a mood. It's changed behavior from a lot of sexual trauma. Sometimes they'll wear oversized clothing, baggy clothing, to grab onto their wrists. Certain things in conversation makes them uncomfortable.
Okay. Yeah, because I do want to help, like, parents. Somebody parent might be watching this, and their child can be being molested right now as we speak, and then they still taking them over here. Because most of the time we know that when someone is molested, it's through someone that we trust.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a family member, a close friend to the family, a godparent's house. So that's why I was asking, like, is it things that parents can look out for to try to recognize? Because we do know that no one, you know, at a young age, you don't know to tell.
Change behavior. Anything that, after you go through sexual trauma, anything that was once your child or your sibling's favorite thing, they hate it.
Mm.
They don't want nothing to do with it no more.
Mm-hmm.
After the fact that it happens, they get moody. They don't want to bathe much. If they become defensive of going somewhere, like to a friend or family house, and they just want to stay in a room, the grades.
Those are all signs to look for.
Yeah, if say you have a good child, and then they start cursing at you, they don't want to hang out with you, they don't talk to you no more, that's signs that something has happened, and they're trying to process in their mind. This generation is different. They try to handle everything, because now parents do so much in front of them, they be like, oh, I don't want to bother them, I'm going to figure it out myself.
And then so... Have you ever seen him, like, now that you're grown?
No.
No? He never got a chance to?
No. I left. I didn't see nobody. I would hope not. Mm-hmm. But later on down the line, I ran into my abuser a couple of years ago before he went to prison, jail for murder.
And when did you tell your mom? So I know you didn't tell her when you was 8. Was there a time that you came out and you told your mom what happened?
I told my mom 4 years ago, because she had gave him my number, and he called, and I was like, who is this? He was like, so-and-so. I hurried up and hung up the phone. I called my mom, was mad, and I forgot I didn't never told her. And she was like, what's wrong? What's the problem? And I said, you molested me. And my mom started crying. I didn't tell my mother until probably like, somewhere in my 20s.
Wow.
Later on in my 20s.
So you held it all those years, like no one knew. And do you feel like there's a way that you could give young girls any advice on how to share, how to tell somebody?
I mean, honestly, that first conversation, if a child says, can I talk to you, do not brush them off. You only got one time to get that information. You don't get no redos. And I get emotional about that, because as soon as something's wrong and a child comes and approaches you and says, they got to talk to you, a lot of parents just brush it off, and it continues to happen. People don't get that opportunity no more.
Right. So the first thing is, at the first sign of saying, I need to talk, or I want to talk to you, don't brush them off.
Don't brush it off. Do not stop talking to kids like they're adults. You got to be their superhero, because parents don't understand when you yell at your child, you're losing your child. It's easier for the groomers to step in and take your darn place.
It's okay. It's okay. So groomers, would you liken groomers as to like how gang members are, the love that a gang member, that gang show to lure, you know, people into the gangs? Do you feel like groomers are akin to that or no?
No, I can't necessarily say that. See, a groomer is someone that preys on single parent homes. It's easier to infiltrate. Why? Because the single parents are always busy. You're trying to pay bills. You're trying to make sure your child has everything. You don't have time to talk to your child. So a groomer will come in and say, hey, I see that you're going through something. Let me help you with the bills just to win you over. So you start leaving the child with them.
Ooh.
It starts with a touch and it becomes the gifts. And why do I give you these gifts? Is because I love you more than your parents do. And then they start to believe that, because the times they tried to talk to you, they're like, oh, they brush me off and say, we'll talk later. You never go back and talk later because you're so busy, because you're frustrated with what you got going on in life. So the groomer's like, see, I told you.
And then it's easier for the child to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then so after you were molested from 8 to how approximately?
About 12.
4 years. And did he ever penetrate you? Or
no, it was just always oral, just different places. Anytime we was alone, he'll have his friends over there make me do it. It's
in front of his friends? And no one knew, felt like that was wrong?
They was just laughing. I mean, what do you expect from teenage boys?
Mm-hmm.
They just thought it was funny. So it was a situation where it's kind of messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. I thank you too. I thanked you for coming before, but even more now that we're talking, like, I know this is emotional for you. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a roller coaster. And what's up? Could you give me some tissue, please, for? And I know you told me too that your mom was really surprised that you were going to do the interview today. And that you don't, you know, but that I thank you. And I'm being sincere with this, that, remember I asked you before we started, like, well, why me? But I really believe like it was God ordained because we just met.
Yeah.
And then for us to share and then, you know, here now. So I do thank you for you. It's okay. Just bring it. It's okay. Just bring it for your vulnerability thank and, you know, your willingness to share and it's hard. And, but I do know this. I do know that you are helping. You're helping, you know, young women, older women, parents will see this. A father will see this. And I'm praying that predators see this and see what they do and how they ruin a young person becomes a broken older person. Right. So I do want to thank you. So from 8 to 12, that went on and mentally, like, could you go back to the time of like what would go on through your mind?
I want to die. I don't want to do it no more. You know, I felt like a disappointment when you're harboring all that trauma and stuff. You don't talk to nobody. And I'm a dang child at the time. So I'm trying to process it. And then school became hard for me because I was getting bullied. This person molesting me. I just didn't want to do it no more.
Why were people bullying you?
An easy target. When you come from... My grandparents, God rest their soul, they'll be like, if one crowd goes this way, go the next way.
Yeah.
And that's what made me get bullied, because I'm ignoring these people. Because I respect my grandparents. So, you know, anything that I was told, I did.
Right, right. And then so walk me to, so you went from that to 8 to 12. So then.
So. Next thing you know, I'm working a campaign at a library.
Voters campaign?
No, like a state senate.
Okay.
One of my grandparents' friends was running for a state senate. And it was this woman that would just come up there. It was hot as heck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm already broken. I have not told nobody nothing that went on. So this woman would just come up there, nicely dressed, and she'll bring me snacks. And she would just talk to me. She was like, how you doing and stuff. I was like, oh, okay. So it took like 7 days. She visited me every day, brought me, you know, whatever. I'm not thinking it's wrong because a lot of parents don't tell you when they say if an adult asks you something, you respond and all this other stuff. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, just thinking she's trying to be polite and stuff. And then she was just like, you look like you're just going through something. And then this is the first time an adult asks me something. Exactly. Right. So I'm opening up. I was like, I just don't feel like my family wants me no more. I just think I need to go. And she was like, I could take you to a place where you don't have to worry about nothing. This is on the fourth day. So I'm up here deciding. I'm like, dang, my mom worked third shift. I just think my whole family just, I'm just expired now. So I was like, I'm going to do them a favor. So the fifth day, she gave me a card. She was like, call me whenever you're ready to leave. She was like, you're going to have to hide somewhere. I'm going to come get you. And I did. I went up the street and hid in a neighbor's broke down car, called her. She picked me up. She was like, we have to go somewhere real quick. So we go probably like maybe 20 minutes from where my mother lived. I wish I never got in that car, but I did. So she pulls up to a house. This man comes out. She was like, this is my husband. I was like, oh, okay. So he makes me get out the car. He was like, turn around. And he was like, well, we finna go run an errand. He took me to White House, Tennessee, and I was a virgin. He was in his 30s. He said, I own you now. And I was like, I didn't understand. He was like, take your clothes off. I own you. I got to break you in. I just knew at that point, I messed up. I messed up. So he takes my virginity, makes me put on some schoolgirl shirt, some stockings, and a little outfit, put a wig on. And he was telling me how I'm going to start making him a whole bunch of money because I'm young. People are ready to see me. So he takes me to Murfreesboro Road. Back at the time, that was a popular strip for can you say prostitutes?
Yeah, you can say prostitute.
Okay. Yeah. Prostitutes. So I was just like, wow. So I met this white woman. We're gonna call her Jay. Met this white woman. She came. That was his top female.
Like his bottom chick.
No, he married the bottom.
Oh, okay.
The woman who got me, that was his bottom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the white girl, she was like the one who
the head basically
over all the girls that they bring in.
His bottom is the one that grooms the girls.
Okay.
The white one works for them.
Okay.
Like the head worker.
Okay. Okay.
So basically, meet her. He has a driver. On Mercer Road, they had 6 apartments that we had to go to. And we would see about 5 to 10 people per apartment and have sex with them for $25 to $50.
$25 to $50
per person. And they gave me an ecstasy pill, and I didn't want it. And he was like, it's to keep you up and working. I was high out of my mind while these people up here violated me. The same day I lost my virginity, I had to have sex with 14 people that day. It was so freaking disgusting. And that was every day. That was every day of my life. Going down to these, walking the streets. Police had pulled us over and gave 2 options. Either let us know where the person who got us on the streets, or give them head. So
the police said that?
Yeah, 9 times, every time I got picked up, I had to have sex with the police officer so I didn't get arrested. So when people ask you why you didn't ask for help, how could I? Because sometimes the police and pimps, they have an agreement. I give you this amount of money. These is my hoes. Turn the other cheek.
Just like the drug game where you have police officers that are paid off. And you were 15 at the time. And that first day was like a living hell for you.
Yeah, I couldn't really do nothing no more. I was tired. And I worked from 6 p.m. all the way to 6 a.m. the next day. Take a shower, get an hour of sleep. And if I made more money than the white girl, my reward was to have a threesome with the pimp and his wife. After I've already had sex all day and night, that was the reward.
They considered that a reward. And how did you, like in your mind, how did you keep yourself going, like from not killing yourself?
I tried and come in there, put it down. Then I got beat up. I tried multiple times and got beat up. It's just like I couldn't go.
Mm-hmm. And this went on for, then it escalated from Murfreesboro Road. Then what was the?
I got promoted. Mm-hmm. So after working the streets, I got promoted to the truck stop. Truck stop, big deal. That's pimping whole central. So basically, I was a lot lizard. A lot lizard is basically, they don't want to call you a prostitute, so they make it more classy and call you a lot lizard. You had to walk in a circle. If a trucker wanted to come see you, they'll flash his lights and you'll go. If security comes, you hide under the truck. This is what I was taught to do.
And you was a lot lizard for how long?
Probably like half the year. Mm-hmm. Half the year I was at. So we'll start on the streets. Then you got promoted. You work the streets, probably like 5 apartments. Then you go to the truck stop. And you work the truck stop all the way to the morning time.
Oh, you were still doing both the apartments and the truck stop. So how many men would you say that you had to sleep with in a day?
Maybe like up to 40.
40 men?
Yep, different apartment complexes and places and stuff.
And then after the truck stop came, what was the next promotion?
They took me to underground place in Dallas, Texas. It was a bunny ranch for prostitutes. So they left me there for about 2.5-3 months. I would line up with 10 to 15 other girls. I always got picked because I was the new litter, young. When you're younger, the more they pay.
And in the bunny ranch, that was more than $25, because now that's a different class of men, right? Talk about that.
So at the bunny ranch, you're having sex with probably people in the government, police officers, lawyers, people up there.
And you never wanted, did you ever feel like you could tell one of them what was going on or no?
No, because they would test you. They would send someone to be like, I don't want you in this life. Let me, you know, take you away from this. I'll help you. I seen that happen to the other girl. And when she thought they had 5 females beat her to a pulp. So when I said that, I was like, no, I'm all right. And next thing you know, Chinese lady come in because she ran the bunny ranch and she said, you did a good job. You get an hour off.
1 hour? Mm-hmm. So if you work 6 at night to 6 in the morning, then you get to take a shower. Do you get to sleep until like 5 the next day?
No, you just get to sleep for an hour. Whenever they tell you get up, time to go work, you go to work. Barely slept.
And you functioned like that year after year because it was for 3 years this went on. And then, so tell us about the time where you were beaten really bad.
The first time was when the police had pulled us over on Murfreesboro Road. And they said, give me the phone. So I gave them the phone. Next thing you know, the pimp called that phone and it was like, this is the police. And then he hung up. Next thing you know, the white girl did something. We got to leave. They brought me to his house. His wife beat me so bad. She blacked both of my eyes and broke my nose. I had to wear glasses and it still made me go. We had sex with people. So I had to wear sunglasses.
You want to take a minute?
I'm sorry.
No, apologize. No. You don't have to apologize. No. You don't have to apologize. You've done nothing wrong. Nothing at all. You've done nothing wrong. Don't you dare. Don't you dare say sorry. You hear me? Don't say sorry.
Drink some of your water. You don't have to apologize, you hear me? Don't you dare say that ever again. You're not sorry about nothing. You hear me? Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Do you want to stop? Because if you want to stop, we can.
On the spot.
You sure?
Just whenever you feel like you can go on, it's fine. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still had to go after they beat me up. I had to put sunglasses on and stuff, and I still had to work. I could barely open my eyes. Mm-hmm. And her husband, he was schizophrenic. He seen how bad she had beaten me. He was like, you went overboard. He was like, nobody don't really want to see her. So they made the glasses. They made that white girl put me on makeup and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was in so much pain. And I was so sleep deprived and drugged out from them drugs they gave me. I was falling asleep when them people was on top of me. It was like nothing even mattered at that point.
Did you and a white girl, did y'all ever forge like a bond?
Absolutely not. She hated me. I hated her. She was, anything that man said, she did. She ruined my life. She wasn't making no money because when you young, you gonna make more money than her.
So it became like you became
a rival. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She would sit there. I can make $4,000 in an hour. She'll act like it was hers to give it to the pimp. And he said, you got to pick up the slack. I started being confused. So I told the woman, I said, I've been making all this money and she taking credit. So they beat her up. Then next thing you know, I got promoted. So while she out of commission, I got to go to the truck stop and get women to choose my pimp.
So then they put you in her spot. How did you learn how to get women to choose your pimp?
I had to lie. You got to be like, yeah, it's fun over here. You'll make money. You get to go out to eat. Anything that's what their pimp not doing. So after they choose, you get the money. They become his hoes. And now y'all walk in the truck together. That's how the game is when you work in the streets and stuff. Mm-hmm. Once them women choose, They got to give over the money, the phone, all that stuff. I give it to my parents. They say, you know, I'm teaching them what we do, how everything operates.
And by now, out of not wanting to, but you had a sense of loyalty to your pimp and his wife. And do you feel like that comes out of fear?
It's nothing but fear. They beat me so bad. How could you not fear somebody like that?
Right. And you never thought about leaving?
I thought about it, but it's always the driver. It was always the driver. Like, after each location, we would stop at MAPCO, give the driver the money, or sometimes the pimp will pull up in his truck, come get the money, and then you're off to the next spot.
And during this time, being that you were raised in a Baptist church, right, you knew God, right? Were you angry with God? Did you feel like he didn't exist anymore?
I did. I stopped praying. I just was ready to die. I begged whoever to just come take me out the game. There was no point in keep going. It felt so empty. I had no friends. So because I had no friends, I had to create people in my mind. So I have multiple personality disorder now. Because those was my friends. You know, you thinking, you don't got nobody to talk to. The phone they gave me, they're monitoring. So you got to create people to be your friend to keep you alive.
Wow. And that's a coping mechanism.
When you go through what I went through, it's 7 people in this in my head. I'm not proud of it, but those are the people who's been with me the longest through my journey and stuff, who didn't abandon me.
How do you feel like you made it through?
Probably them. And that's how I created Monroe Sweets. She was ruthless. She didn't care. Nobody could bully me. It was my backbone to everything.
And Monroe Sweets, we'll get into it. So after that horrific, you know, beating or whatever, then there came a time where the white girl, she fell in love with somebody, right?
She fell in love with a trick. And she had planned her escape, and I was not a part of it. What happened was, it was going on 3:00 in the morning. It's cold outside. You know, I'm up here looking. I asked the truck drivers, hey, have you seen her? It was like, well, she's been in that truck across from me the entire night. So I knock on there. The man gets out and chases me with a knife. I run, I act like I'm, you know, he ran me off. He's hurry up and start the truck. I called him, I said, she finna dip off. He was like, B, if you don't get my keys and that money, he said, I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna kill your family. So what do? I get on the back of the 18-wheeler, you know, where they got that little holding part, and I'm hanging off. He's zooming to the exit. Some guys at Waffle House saw me hanging off the truck. He not seeing me because I'm in the blind spot. But he goes up an exit up, stops, goes in there to get some condoms. I hurry up, snatch that dough, knock me in the face, get the keys. I already told the pimp while I'm hanging on back of the truck that, you know, we're going to the next exit, whatever. Police come. It's surrounded. I hurry up, and after I popped in her face and stuff, grab the keys, grab the money, hop off into the car where the pimp was, and went down. And next thing you know, he was like, I can't believe you rolled from a truck for me. Did not know if I had a damn knife, I would have slit that man's throat. I didn't get no option. You said you was going to kill me and my family. Like, bro, I'm scared of you. I couldn't believe I even rode on the back of an 18-wheeler hanging off for my life.
It was fear and desperation, though.
Exactly. Yeah. The survival of the fittest. I had to do that. I was like, oh, man. And I believed him, too, because he was schizophrenic.
And what did you get a reward for getting the money and the keys back?
They told me I can, they asked me, did I want them to cook for me? Baby, set me free. No, I'm kidding. get away, you know, set me free, dang it.
But they couldn't do that. No. Because you were pretty, young, you know, they had groomed you. You was the best. It sounds like you was the best worker they had.
I was.
Yeah.
I made them a lot of money.
Because at the Bunny Ranch with all the high top execs and stuff, during that time, I think you said that you made like $2 million. All for somebody else.
All for somebody else. Nothing. None of that. The only thing that you could do living in that situation is breathe. If the thing was in that household, if other men came around, you look down on the floor, don't never look up. Because that is not your pimp talking to you. And if you did, you get beat up. Those was the consequences. So always look down. Don't engage. Don't take nothing. Eat when I tell you to eat. Breathe, basically. And stuff like that.
And do you feel like now, even though you're healing and you're on your journey, do you feel like now you still find yourself like looking down if you hear Mel talking?
Nah, I cuss him out.
So how did you get out? Tell us how you was able to get away.
Well, the first time I got out, I was raped by five men at the truck stop and beaten bad. They tied me to a pole. A white woman found me. Called the police. I was in the hospital. And I had called my godmom to come get me and stuff. So this is how you develop Stockholm syndrome, because okay. I'm on drugs real bad. I don't know how to get out of that. I need money and stuff. I was going to church with her, and then I just was like, I don't think I'm going to make it. I didn't think I was worth anything no more, so I went back to the company.
Oh, you had got out one time? How long were you out for?
For about a month and a half.
And you just felt like this, you didn't want a normal, you thought you wanted to be free in a normal life. But once you got the freedom in a normal life, you wanted to go back.
They turned me to a junkie. 4X pills a day, having to sleep with people. I was locked up. I didn't have no freedom. I didn't know how to live with other people and stuff like that. So I dismissed it. Then I went back. Went another year around with this, getting beat up and stuff like that. And then my final escape was a truck driver tried to kidnap me. He took the money. Him and his friend tried to hurry up and take me with him so I could be they hoe for the truck stops. I ran, lost the money. His wife had beat me up, dropped me off at an apartment they had for the girls now. So nobody was there. I put $500 up my coochie, and I called one of my friends and I said, listen, this was going on. I'm on this Boots phone. I'm going to be hiding behind this trash can, behind the little corner store. She picked me up. I had nothing but whole clothes and stuff, and I didn't have none of this weight. You would not recognize me. I was this skinny.
Really?
All bone. All you saw was my bone. I look like a dang junkie.
I wish I would have told you to bring pictures.
I have a picture.
Okay, we'll get them to add to the episode. And did your friend recognize you? Mm-hmm. No?
No. I was on drugs so bad. She's the reason why I'm alive today.
Aww. And your mom, where was your mom at during this time?
Looking.
She had a missing report person put out for you. She thought you had... Did she think you had died, or what did she think?
No, they was looking. Our whole family was looking. But when you're kidnapped, if a motherfucker don't want to find you, they going to make sure that you stay anonymous. Different wigs. I didn't look like her darn daughter no more.
Did you ever think about, like, I should just call my mother?
I don't know the number no more. I didn't know nothing. After you being captive where a person is sitting up here monitoring your life, I didn't have a phone. I didn't get to watch TV. The streets was all I knew.
What would they do? What would you have? When your cycle came on, you still had to work?
He taught me how to plug myself. So he would take a tampon and he said, lay back and he stuffed it all the way up to where he couldn't see the string no more. They didn't give an F if you was on your cycle.
Said tricks. I mean, like men that wanted to have sex, they wouldn't care if you were on your cycle.
You didn't tell them. They didn't know because the tampon was pushed far up where it blocked everything. So they would think a diaphragm was in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell. They never could.
And when you got out this time, the last and final time when your friend came and picked you up, how did you get on the road to recovery?
She cold turkey me. I was in the room. I didn't want to get up or nothing because I was afraid the pimp was going to find me and stuff. So I just sat there. I didn't eat for 2 weeks because they was getting them drugs out of me. I didn't do nothing. And, you know, just constant prayer and her brother got me back to health.
And when did you finally call your mom to let her know, like, I'm free? Or, you know, when did you finally get in touch with your mom?
Probably like 8 months later.
Okay. We'll break right here. Okay. Did you ever think about, like, your mom, like, reaching out to your mom, like, once she was at your friend's house and she's helping you to detox and to come down?
I didn't want her to see me like that.
Oh, you didn't think that, but she wouldn't. Let me tell you something. A mother's love, she would not have cared how you looked. She just would have been relieved to see her child. So when did you decide to call her? How did you call her? Because you couldn't remember the number.
My friend. She asked around. She got it. And I just was like, hey. And then my mom would cry on the phone. She was like, where you at? And I told her. Then she came and saw me and she hugged me. But I didn't really just have love for her. I didn't have love for anybody. I didn't. Because I wasn't getting hugs. I was getting beaten. So I didn't know how to take that.
Yeah, to accept love. To accept love because it was distorted by now. Which is understandable. You were numb. Numb.
I was numb to a lot.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you begin to rebuild and to heal?
My friend had took me to Plato's Closet to get clothes. And then she took me to the mall. And I was just amazed by everything because it was like, dang, this is all the stuff I miss. And, you know, it was just a road to recovery from there. But as I'm recovering, I'm realizing, okay, well, what I'm going to do for work, my highest education is like 9th, 10th grade. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody was hiring. So then I was like, boom. Okay, well, I'm going to go back to selling my body, but I'm going to sell it for myself. So I got on Backpage and Craigslist when it was popping. Made probably about 2-3 million from working those sites. I almost got killed, though, by the banana truck killer.
Really? I never heard of the banana truck killer.
You got to look it up. He had a big old yellow 18-wheeler. He would go murder prostitutes at truck stops.
And they end up catching him.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you... Oh, you was with him one night.
No. I was about to get in the truck. But this other Latino girl got in that truck. And the truck drivers was flashing. They said, he here. So they trap him. That's how he got caught.
Really? Did he kill the Latino girl?
No, he was about to. Like, as soon as she got in, he parked the truck. She was already hogtied on that bed. But them truckers, because they kept saying, beware. One thing about truck drivers, they talk to people on the CBs. So they see stuff you not seeing. It's some good truckers and then it's some bad truckers. They were being good truckers.
Mm. And how long did you stay on Craigslist and Backpage?
Probably till it shut down. Then I went to become a stripper.
So at the time when you decided to go like Craigslist, Backpage, did you feel like it was better now that you didn't have a pimp? Mm-hmm. You felt like it was better because I'm my own person?
Yeah.
And it didn't make you feel no kind of way.
I was like, Brittany, you gotta get your life together. I said, but I had a goal. I was like, I need to make a bunch of money and then go flip it and invest in something. So that's what I was thinking. Like, I didn't get my first place till I was like 22. That's kind of like when I felt alive, you know, getting my life back. It may seem simple to other people, but after being owned and a person telling you what to do and when to do it, I felt good.
Yeah, yeah. What you said, that was a big accomplishment. That was a big accomplishment. Yeah. And then so you tried dancing for a little while.
Yeah. They bullied me there because I look better than them. They did.
You were supposed to bring, where was Monroe Sweets? You were supposed to bring her out when they tried to bully you.
I did. That's when she started to develop. Because mm-hmm. I was dancing and I was still selling it. Mm-hmm. But nobody was coming to see them. They was coming to see me. So they had threw my clothes away. My dancing clothes. So I went to City Trends. Got me a little lingerie outfit and some boots because you wasn't stopping nothing. And that's how my confidence go. Because I was like, I'm not going for that no more. I'm not finna let nobody push me over. I'm just finna, you know, we finna fight it out. And that's what it became. And after that, nobody bothered me. So then I changed my name. I was like, because at first it was B Sweets. Mm-hmm. But then Monroe Sweets was more like BAM, because I liked Marilyn Monroe at the time. And I was just like, boom, Monroe Sweets, because I'm still a sweet person.
Yeah.
So after that, I got into porn.
Mm-hmm.
I met Cherokee Diaz.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Well, I know. Well, yeah. To anybody that knows, I met her at a club and I was like, you know, I'm interested. I did my research because I was like, I don't want to be selling my body. I'm going to end up being in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, long story short, got with her and I did my first scene with somebody named Chad, a white man named Chad. And I didn't know. You got to understand, I was a bit ignorant. When I was 23, I didn't know that porn takes off. I thought it was a secret. So, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm finna do this. They paying me, you know, $800. I was like, okay, let's do it. Next thing you know, I didn't know she was famous. I didn't really do my research like I was supposed to. All I know is once that video hit the internet, everybody, including my mother, found out. And I lied and told people I was from Biloxi, Mississippi. Because I didn't know it was going to get back to
me. Yeah.
So after I did that in LA, I was like, dang, why my phone ring like that? They was like, my friend said, do you know you're on the internet? I didn't tell nobody what I was going to go do. Yeah. I said, what you talking about? Because they was like, I shot a movie and bam. Overnight sensation. I had probably 2,000 followers on Twitter. After that, it went to 10,000, 15,000.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Was your mother upset with you?
No, honestly, she probably was, but at this point, for losing me so long, it was just like,
would I go along with whatever?
My mom is the type of woman, and I love her. I love her to death. She'll be like, I don't play about my daughter. I don't agree with nothing she does, but that's mine right there.
That makes you feel good, right? Yeah, yeah. Because we have to love our kids and love each other through our faults, through whatever a person, you know, we have to love them regardless.
Yeah, she don't like nothing. She'll tell you. You get what I'm saying? You know, that's a righteous woman right there.
Right.
But at the end of the day, she doesn't turn her back. I can always call that's my OG. She gonna pull up.
That's what's up. I'm pulling up about you now, too, baby. I'm pulling up. And Deanna said she gonna pull up, too. So now today
now I'm retired. I've been retired for 2.5 years. So I just went into full time streaming content, creating and, helping with sex trafficking victims and trauma and just getting everything out there. I'm working on a book and a documentary, and I do social media marketing and branding. So I kind of just steer away from anything at all. Don't want to deal with it.
And are you in therapy?
I stopped. And she had made me mad. I think it was because I'm bipolar. So I don't know. She said, she was like, you got to stop. I guess I told her, I was like, people be trying me. She's like, you're not on the street somewhere. And I was like, girl, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, you could get tried any type of way. You know, when people feel like you're kind of tender. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I stopped. I was like, I'm not paying you no more. And I left. She was really good. She was a very good therapist. I just had a moment.
Well, maybe you should call her back. No. No? Have you started going back to church or no?
No, because this, I just can't do it. It's so hypocritical because these pastors, there's some of them are nasty. And why? Because I've dealt with them. So I praise the Lord at home.
You got to come to church with me one Sunday, though. Okay?
That's a try.
Okay. Well, at least we'll try.
I'm not okay? against it. I just, you know, it's baby steps.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure.
But I listen to, you know, the word at home. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know.
The trust is broken. I understand. I get it. Wholeheartedly, I get it. Tell everybody where to find you.
You can follow me on TikTok, The Real Monroe Sweets, but it's actually Brittany's Trill Talk podcast. Snapchat, B Trill Talk. Same thing, B Trill Talk everywhere on all platforms.
So is it just the letter B?
Trill Talk. And then for TikTok, it's THE Real Monroe Sweets.
But we're not Monroe Sweets no more, right?
Yeah, they won't let me change my name.
Oh, TikTok won't let you change your name. Oh, okay. But you go by Brittany now, mm-hmm. right? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. That's my real name.
Okay. How do you feel?
I feel better now.
You do? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you smiling. Tell us something before we go. Tell us something you feel like you need to break free from.
Meeting new people. Talking to people more. I have social anxiety. So this is a big deal for me to do this because behind the scenes, like on camera, being a streamer, you don't deal with nobody. So I could talk to thousands of people. This right here, I needed a shot.
Because I get what you're saying. Like being in the comfort of your own space and streaming, it's still sort of like you're closed off. You have that closed personality where you don't let people in. Yeah. But you see, you just met me. You see how good, like we talked and everything, like, you know, so it was meant. So that's something I'm going to be praying for with you too and believing God to help you break free from the social anxiety and to send the right people in your life.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you again for sharing your testimony. Thank you for just being who you are. You are so beautiful.
I mean that
in the most sincere way. And I just thank you for, I don't know if you know it, but God's going to use you. God is going to use you in ways that he hasn't used you before. All that pain you went through, all those times, every time, everybody, it wasn't for naught. It was hell that you went through, but I promise you, God got you. Okay? Mwah. Thank y'all so much. I know y'all enjoyed this episode. I love y'all. I'll see y'all next week.